right. Well, hello everybody again. This is the same day actually, and I noticed that for number 101 of the Rays and Initiations webinar commentaries part 2, I would say, we don't have so much to do. I want to perhaps end this particular program when we finish discussing the sixth initiation. We are in the middle of that particular discussion, so I don't know whether this will even last an hour, but let's just get into it, and then come the discussions of later initiations about which, we can know nothing except what DK tells us, and he himself has not experienced, he tells us, these later initiations. At these three final initiations, therefore, the significance of creation, of quality, and of purpose are successively revealed to the master. Now, I suppose creation is initiation six, quality relating to the second ray, initiation 7, and purpose, initiation 8. I'm not sure that he's listing here the ninth initiation, about which he will say, at least a little something. are successively revealed to the master. We still call him a master at this high stage, but we have to distinguish between the master, who is the fifth degree initiate, and the Chohans, which Chohanship begins at the sixth initiation. So sometimes DK refers to a Chohan of the seventh degree, and I wonder if in relating to the eighth and ninth degree, he would call them some kind of Buddhas. All right, there's a little more light on the subject. Okay, so they're successively revealed, and that which makes the revelation possible is not only the action of the one initiator in whatever mode he may be. It's no longer apparently Sanat Kumara, but a certain existence at the sixth degree, the planetary logos at the seventh degree, and I'm not sure who is the initiator at the eighth and ninth degree. Maybe it continues to be the planetary logos in some respect, but I keep on thinking that at those high degrees, the solar logos has something to do with the process. Maybe simply the inspiration of the planetary logos. So that which makes the revelation possible is not only the action of the one initiator and of the initiating group, when such a group is required to, as we have seen, strengthen the point of tension for successful contact with the energies involved. But the major factor is the developed sensitivity of the initiate himself. So if we can say this, and maybe we can say this, that initiation is sensitization. A sensitivity which has developed through many eons of lives and of vital experience, living experience, I suppose. And the eon, how long is an eon? Well, eons are of different lengths. In one respect, an eon can be considered a round, but all of this evolution has taken place in the for many at least, during the fourth round of this particular chain. There may have been some who have worked in a previous, even the moon chain is part of this round, but not the development of the human being in a previous solar system. Anyway, eons are certain spans of time, and they allow the writer to be a little bit vague about which cycle he is referencing, and it can be used as a blind, just the way certain names for cycles like Manvantara can be used as a blind because there are more than one type of Manvantara. The objective of the evolutionary process to which all lives on our planet have to submit has been to develop the sensitivity which will make revelation possible. Now, remember, we have a second ray soul as the soul ray of our planetary logos. So the second ray, of course, is the prototype of sensitivity. And when we call Sirius the brilliant star of sensitivity, we hint at its profound, probably monadic second ray, sixth ray monadic subray, and well, the fifth ray soul is not so much about sensitivity, but the two highest rays of Sirius are about sensitivity, the sixth ray and the second ray. This is going with the kind of assumption or speculation that there are two monadic rays, one of them the final monadic ray. Okay, so the objective of the evolutionary process to which all lives on our planet have to submit has been to develop this sensitivity, especially now in this sensitive solar system, very much an astral Buddhic solar system in which the soul development of our planet correlates with the ongoing second ray sensitivity of the soul of the solar logos. And it might be said that from one definite angle, the goal of all experience has been revelation. Always more and more coming into the light, more and more of reality coming into the light. Each revelation carrying the initiation closer, the initiate closer to the heart of the sun, wherein all things are known and felt, and through which all forms, all beings, and all things can be bathed in love. What a wonderful, wow, you know, there are these old commentary statements which are so really wonderful. Carrying the initiate closer to the heart of the sun, what should we call this? Maybe the soul, the soul nature of the solar logos. That's one way of looking at it. There is also a kind of subjective sun, apparently, on the cosmic astral plane. I mean, whenever we're dealing with a second subplane and that which is found upon it, we have something to do with the heart. This is analogizing from the charts in which we see that the heart center of the human being, way down on the systemic levels, is occurring on the second subplane. So let's see what we have here. I want to come on now. All right. And AAB diagrams and open, so we will have something to refer to. You know, like when you deal with this down here, you notice that the heart center is found on the second subplane. So if we start analogizing upward, anything on the on monadic planes, cosmically considered, the monadic subplane of the cosmic physical, the monadic subplane of the cosmic astral, and even the monadic subplane of the cosmic mental, something to do with the heart center is there to be found. So is it legitimate to analogize upwards? Well, sometimes it is, if one is careful about it. We're going closer to the heart of the sun. Revelation. The goal of all experience has been revelation. Within the heart of the sun is great revelation, carrying the initiate closer to the heart of the sun, wherein, as we might say, through any soul nature, if the heart of the sun is the soul nature of the soul of Logos, wherein all things are known and felt, and through which all forms, all beings, and all things can be bathed in love. It's an amazing statement. You know, we do apparently live in a caring system with a great loving solar deity, and even though we don't know it, it will be revealed to us how we are bathed in love. So ponder on these words, for the microcosmic correspondence to the macrocosmic fact is full of teaching value. Well, we've been looking kind of for the macrocosmic correspondence to what we consider to be the microcosmic fact, but from the soul nature and from the usual position of the egoic lotus on the second subplane of our systemic mental plane, we are bathed in love, and there are still higher sources on the cosmic physical plane which make it possible for us to be bathed in love. Certainly this is the nature of our present solar system, a love system, the development of which is about half completed. The time spans are so immense that from the perspective of the tiny human life, they seem really almost impossible to grasp, but we somehow have to. See to it that each lesson learned, each day, each revelation grasped and understood, makes your heart full of love. Wonderful stuff. And enables you to love your fellow man with ardent, fiery warmth. This is not just a kind of a casual saying, you know, I love you and you're quite okay. But to love our fellow human beings as the Christ does, there's the hint there, of course, because he's the great exemplar of love on our planet, with ardent, fiery warmth. I'm quoting some ancient aphorisms for disciples. And we can be very grateful that he does that, because it brings us into a universal condition, a universal understanding. Each lesson learned each day, each revelation grasped and understood, make sure that it makes your heart full of love and enables you to love your fellow man with ardent, fiery warmth. Well, you know, although we may not realize it, you know, we are loved even now with ardent, fiery warmth. You know, there's that old, very childlike hymn, Jesus loves me, yes, I know, 'cause the Bible told me so. You know, when I was a young person, I just thought that was the most preposterous thing. And, of course, revealed a kind of dependency on a book that I had no faith in whatsoever. But now I see that there are great beings, such as the Masters and the Christ, who do love with ardent, fiery warmth, even if they have to be at times very strict with us to prevent us from derailing our evolutionary efforts, prevent us from breaking the law and incurring karmic retribution, which may slow down the whole process and simply add to the pain experienced. So a certain strictness is required, and there we have Saturn, a great friend of the disciple, who seems to be very strict and cold, but in the last analysis, bringing us home more rapidly. We're talking here about continuing to talk about revelations within the living light, continuing to speak of revelations within the living light. That's what the theme has been. Revelations. Oh, goodness. Let's see. Revel. Okay. revelations within the living light. At the ninth, so, you know, when he says the final three, but really it's the final four initiations, starting from the initiation of a being which is no longer considered a human being, although still a human monad. At the ninth initiation of refusal, the revelation presented to the master concerns the nature of being and of existence. Now, you know, there have been so many speculations about these things, and the Brahmanic religions and the Vedanta and the Upanishads and so forth of the Vedas, they speculate on the nature of being and of existence. But even Shankara, you know, probably an initiate of the sixth degree and a great exponent, developing ideas concerning the nature of being and existence, could not reach into such a revelation as is accorded at the ninth degree. There is naught I can say to you which could be in any way explanatory of being. For being is related to that which creates, to the universal point of planetary or solar life, which is and ever has been responsible for the life of all forms, from the greatest manifestation to the smallest. And this is, we say, this is being within the universe. Now, you know, extra universal being is infinitely greater. And let's just say that the absolute, or the absolute deity, which is extra universal, is not always encumbered by a universe to deal with, only cyclically so. So there is naught that I can say to you, I have to repeat this to myself, there is naught that I can say to you which could be in any way explanatory of being. For being is related to that which creates, or I oftentimes say that becoming is the same as creating. And it makes more sense to me, you know, because when we create, we stand apart. But when we become, the creation is of ourselves. And that which eventuates as a creation has gone forth from the self we are. That, to me, makes the most sense. Not that could be in any way explanatory of being, for being is related to that which creates, to the universal point of planetary or solar life, you know, the utmost point, I suppose, of that particular being, whichever it has been, it may be, and has ever been responsible for the life of all forms, from the greatest manifestation to the smallest. But so every being, or every great being, and I don't want to make everything disappear, every great being has this point here referenced. What does he call it? The universal point of planetary or solar life. Okay. From which creation or becoming flows. Okay. Now, let's go on with these abstruse matters about which we are probably comprehending less than 1%. When that revelation is accorded to the initiate, the revelation of the nature of being and existence, okay, the revelation of being and existence, he for the first time receives his initial contact with what is called in the occult and esoteric books the central spiritual sun. Now, this is, I would say, this is the monadic nature of the solar logos. And we have to go to the, we may receive impulses from the heart of the sun, but not from the central spiritual sun. There are some solar angels, apparently, who are affiliated or whose nature is found within the central spiritual sun. And, of course, as monads, that must be the case. And even there's a planetary central spiritual sun and a solar central spiritual sun. There are both a planetary central spiritual sun, or CSS, and a solar central spiritual sun. He realizes for himself that those words concern a basic fact and are related to the purpose of the solar system, which was revealed in substantial fullness at the eighth initiation. Just as the heart of the sun revealed to him the quality of the solar system. So it is the beingness of the solar logos which is revealed at the ninth initiation. When it is realized that our planetary purpose is mysteriously related to the revelation of love upon our little planet, and at least at this time, when the soul ray is the central, well, I better not use that word, point of focus, our little planet, the Earth, through the process of creation, so the two working out through the three, the concept emerges that there is the probability that our planet has a unique relation to the heart of the sun. Well, let's just say that both of these great entities, one much greater than the other, has a secondary soul. Yes, so that is our main relation to the solar logos. I mean, we are related to Uranus monadically through our first ray, monad, and I'm not sure whether Mars ultimately would have a first ray monad as well as a subsidiary fifth, perhaps. But definitely there is a strong identification in soul between our solar logos and our little planet. And Jupiter has the same kind of thing, I suppose, with its second-ray soul. This is a soul solar system, and later the monadic ray will be revealed. At the moment, for non-sacred planets, the monadic ray, we are told, is occultly non-effective. And maybe some of the sacred planets begin to bring through something of their monadic ray, but really I think it's more for the next solar system. There are many hints for you in what I have said. They are hints to me also. Only I can bring to their expansion into ascertained fact a wider knowledge than is as yet your possession. Well, DK has been studying a long time. He's a supreme student. I guess he's got a number of thousands of years on us here with regard to study. Has been studying thousands of years longer and deeper than will be possible for us as yet. Okay. Because he was already, we are told, a famous Buddhist scholar in the early years A.D. And even as a kind of assistant to Pythagoras, the later Kuthumi, Dike was Cleinias, the so-called just Greek. Interesting, the idea of justice and the way that Libra has sometimes been inferred to have something to do with his ashram. I certainly think that Gemini does, given his revelation of knowledge and the people that he has chosen to be his conduits and leaders. You know, Alice Bailey, Gemini, Sun, Mary Bailey, Gemini Ascendant. No, Gemini Sun, Foster Bailey, Gemini Ascendant. Gemini was all over the place there. And when we think about this tremendous impartation, this teaching, it so much suggests Gemini and maybe some of the Taurus for the light. Okay. So, well, one day we'll be able to expand these hints due to our accumulation of knowledge in the manner that the Tibetan now can do. There is little more I can say anent this crucial. That's a crossroads, right? He chooses words with care. Cross roads and decisive sixth initiation, because it's going to determine a path of evolution which will last a very long time. It determines a path of evolution which lasts a very long time. How long we don't know, but going to be for the duration of this solar system, which at least according to the Brahmanic chronology is a very long time, trillions of years. So this initiation, it embodies the master's recognition of liberation, and in its processes he demonstrates that liberation by making free decision anent his future state of being and purpose. It's so interesting. It's a free decision, but there's only one correct choice. All right, a free decision with only one correct choice. Such are some of the paradoxes of the occult path. Into all this, we will be the participants, no matter what we are going through at this time in our much more limited sphere. The future for the average person, and for the average disciple, is contained within his past and is implemented in his present. Well, you know, we are told that the great choice has much to do with the accumulated past of the initiate. Okay, and I think I didn't get that quite in purple, but it's got to be. Okay. Well, he says it's not so for the initiate of the sixth initiation, yet earlier he talked about the inevitability of the decision based upon all that the disciple, initiate has been. Anyway, he in this particular paragraph, it says he is entirely liberated from the past And we have been told, you know, that the karmic slate, is wiped clean. And the law of karma no longer has any hold over him, at least in its application in lower spheres. Even great logoi have karma. But the law of karma, as it applies to mankind, to the human kingdom, to our planetary karma, well, he's still associated with the planet at the sixth degree, but at the ninth, he will not be. The law of karma no longer has any hold over him. He makes free decision, and his future is decided by him, not on the basis of its inevitability, or as providing him with a field in which to work off karma, but on the basis solely of qualification for service. Well, maybe he realizes what his qualifications are in the accumulations of the past and chooses accordingly. But he's not compelled. The initiate is not compelled to choose in a specific path, but his qualifications will indicate to him the correct choice. So we had better, you know, read what we've been reading before, because there was a discussion of inevitability. I wonder if I can find that, possibly. Well, here is a statement about inevitability and karma regarding the choice. So this has to be considered with what we've just read. The master, as he makes his decision and chooses one of the seven paths, which unitedly form the planetary antikarana, is forced thereto, forced by the accumulation of past karma. All evil karma has necessarily been worked off, but his accumulated good karma, I suppose, building in him qualities and qualifications, makes his final decision inevitable. Or does he mean here the nature of his final decision? From that instant of decision, he stands entirely free and liberated from all aspects and forms of planetary karma. So the factor of inevitability is here, and his past experience has to do with his good karma, which makes his final decision inevitable. He's free from all planetary karma, which is greater and more vast than his little individual karma, be it good or bad. He is then in himself the summation of all past experience. So it seems compelling, or directing, if not absolutely compelling. All right, so that is the page that should be considered, page 724. And let's see where we are here. And I will just say to all of us, let's say that consider, however, page 724 and the inevitability of his choice based upon his good karma. Okay. Sometimes DK says things that seem to contradict what he said earlier. Of course, they don't, but it's just a question of understanding these things in context. And that will take certainly more than this particular life.
So,
What we're reading here is that he's entirely liberated from his past. The law of karma no longer has any sway over him. He makes a free decision, but he is directed thereto on the basis of his qualifications for service, and these qualifications are based on his good karma and his accumulations of faculty. Nevertheless, a very different situation. Okay, the decision once made is a fixed decision, and there is no turning back or relinquishment of it. There may be modifications as one goes along. Obviously, the Buddha will not forever remain involved in earth service, and other paths will call to him, and he will, as DK suggests, correct his very understandable error. And there are, you know, changes of path along the way that cannot be foreseen, but for the moment, the great decision applies to the first path to be taken. And contained within some of the higher paths are methods of reaching it, which may involve other paths. As I said, you know, if one is on the path of the planetary logoi, that can be reached via a solar angelic expression. So the ray path too may lead to the path of the solar logoi. And so along the way, there may be transferences from path to path, either forward or apparently backwards, because the Christ is taking the ray path, and yet he can direct his attention to the Syrian path later. But eventually, a great destination will be reached, and at first, a decision is made which directs the disciple at least along an initial path. So there's no turning back or relinquishment of it, nor so free is the master from all possible hindrances. Is there any desire to turn back or possibility that he could do so? This is very different from us, you know. The Christ had to warn us, he who puts his hand to the plow and instead turns back is not worthy to enter the kingdom of heaven. Well, the master is vastly more experienced, and the attractions of the past are severed, and a great freedom characterizes the way he treads his chosen path on the way of higher evolution. Well, these are words to us, but they do at least give kind of a vague sense of the amazing opportunities that lie ahead, and humanity needs those opportunities, a sense of them, to be inspirited, inspired, to keep going. There are so many cul-de-sacs, and they are depressing. So certainly there's nothing depressing about the picture Master DK has offered. It's just filled with cosmic opportunity. The remaining three initiations demonstrate these points still more clearly and definitely, and the light in which the initiate walks waxes even ever brighter and brighter. So initiation 7, 8, 9 is what we're speaking of. Brighter and brighter is the light, and greater the revelation, and greater his participation and identification. Light reveals to him the nature and the purpose of the cosmic etheric planes, the four highest planes of our planetary life, with which he is still engaged until the ninth initiation. It's a bit like dying, you know. When you die, you leave behind the etheric level and go to the cosmic astral. Okay. Ever brighter and brighter. So the cosmic etheric plane and its purpose, I mean, you can function on the cosmic etheric plane as a master does, even as an initiative of the fourth degree does, without knowing its deep and fundamental essential purpose. This light brings to its attention the nature of certain extraplanetary conditions, and for the first time, these become factual to him and not just hypothetical. So, during these later initiations, he becomes aware of the contribution of various planetary logoi to high conditions on Earth, and not just theoretically. Okay. The light reveals to him his future opportunities once his final choice or decision is made. But as I said, he seems to be making along the way choices which take him from path to path. Or he may work at, let's say, becoming a planetary logos, perhaps in the company of many others like himself, fused together. But then another choice will be made, because development does not stop at becoming a planetary logos. You know, maybe one can go on the path of absolute sonship or the path of the solar logoi. So many choices lie ahead, but there is that initial choice which will take him to a training planet, probably a sacred planet in our solar system, and eventually towards a certain star system or constellation, which are chakras in our local one, about whom naught may be said. The light reveals to him his future opportunities once his final choice is made, or decision is made, as said above. It also reveals to him the nature of divine purpose as our planetary logos conceives it under the inspiration of the solar logos, because what is obvious is that our planetary purpose must fit within the greater purpose of the solar logos, in whom our planetary logos represents a certain chakra or center. So he can now express himself fully upon the monadic plane. Now you kind of wonder, can he do that entirely at the sixth initiation? I guess we are still speaking of the sixth initiation. So it looks like this is possible at the sixth initiation. The plane of universal life. If it's universal, it's related to the solar logos. If this plane is universal, it is related to the solar logos. And the great heresy of separateness has slipped away from him. And we try, of course, even earlier in our advancing career, to slip away from the great heresy, but we're talking about a very high state in which it is really achieved. So, monadic identification leaves behind all possibility of the thought of being a separate unit. And obviously, the brothers in the Lodge of Materialism don't have this. Somehow they are plunged into lesser conditions and do not return in such a way that they can see the vaster picture from an understanding of identification. So the great heresy of separateness has slipped away from him, and he knows nothing but love, unity, spiritual identification, and universal awareness, awareness of our solar system and our solar logos. And this is, of course, a beautiful consummation at the sixth degree, and it can only intensify. The Christ, then, being of the seventh degree, working in that way, we would say knows nothing but love, unity, spiritual identification, and universal awareness. Well, this intensifies as he goes along. Maybe, it's beginning at the sixth degree, but at a certain point, the monadic vehicle has to be destroyed. The temple of Ezekiel also, has to be destroyed, and the alchemically liberated monad has to escape into the sea of fire, and it is this alchemically liberated monad which is making the outward bound journey. I guess we could wonder, does if he goes to a training planet like Venus or Jupiter, does he retain his monadic vehicle? When exactly does he relinquish his monadic vehicle and enter the sea of fire freely? So, when exactly does the Chohan of whatever degree relinquish his monadic vehicle? Difficult to say, but certainly by the time the monadic vehicle is composed of matter or substance of the cosmic physical plane, and obviously he can't take that onto the cosmic astral plane, just like we can't take our dense physical body or our etheric body onto the cosmic, onto the astral plane. So certainly by the time he refuses to return to the cosmic physical plane, he has relinquished his monadic vehicle, and maybe before. Can it be? Well, it would have to be retained for those who are on the path of Earth service, because it allows them to reach down into the Brahmic worlds where the service has to occur. So, is the Christ in possession of a monadic vehicle? I would say yes, because it's necessary, and he's in possession of the triadal vehicles of the Buddha, who apparently did relinquish them and kept them in a state of preservation for his brother, the Lord Maitreya. Well, all of these things occur on very high levels beyond us, but we can at least see some of the movements, and we do know that even the monadic vehicle, I think the important thing here is to realize that the monadic vehicle would be a limitation at a certain stage of advancement. And if the Chohan is liberated into the sea of fire and is not on the path of Earth service, then maybe the monadic vehicle is relinquished by that time at the seventh degree. Anyway, I can only speculate, and there's no certainty for me in it, but maybe we can gather some degree of certainty as we go along. So these wonderful things do exist by the time he's taking the sixth initiation and subsequent initiations. Let's see. I'm trying to make this a bit bigger, right? It's so beautiful consummation that we should somehow have it before our mind's eye in an emphasized manner. And, you know, we hope that the great heresy of separateness is slipping away from us now, but we're very much enthralled by separateness, even at this time. But it will not be so forever. As we pursue the path of isolated unity, which all of us do pursue, regardless of what our ray may be. I mean, when you think about it, isolated unity, inclusive reason, presented attributes, each one of them may emphasize a certain ray, but the abilities and perceptions found in relation to any one of them belong to all the ray types, even though a particular ray type may emphasize it more than other ray types. So the day may come then for all of us when we know nothing but love, unity, spiritual identification, and a universal awareness, let's call it a solar systemic awareness, perhaps. Because, as I say, the word universe is used in various ways and not necessarily as the grand entirety containing trillions, well, at least hundreds of billions of galaxies. Because of this, he can become a creator, because he loves, senses unity, identifies spiritually, and because he is aware of conditions within the solar system, he can become a creator, for creation is the expression of life, love, and purpose. So expression in a way of vitality, of love, and of that archetypal design, that relationship, archetypal relationship, which we call purpose. And all these three he can now understand and fully express. Well, greater and greater vistas will open up before us, and we literally have no notion, no dream even, of what it is that really lies before us. We, at a very lowly state, and the Master, we're told that he too has little idea of what lies ahead when he's chosen a particular path. He's looked ahead, he's felt into it, he's intuited into it. Somehow, all of his past qualifications incline him in a certain direction, and yet he could choose freely. He chooses freely and then is involved in an outward bound path, which, or inward bound maybe, which will take untold eons to accomplish. I mean, if a solar system can last 311 trillion 40 billion years, then how long does this progress to various other solar systems last? Maybe the law of analogy can help us. Maybe some of those solar systems are Maya Virupic and do not last a long time. Well, you know, we're into such abstruse matters, but it's all thought through, it's all waiting, it's all available, it's promising, it's uplifting, it's inspiring. And if people have even a glimpse of what may lie ahead of them, it will be so much more appealing than playing the harp, wearing a white robe, and sitting around in heaven, indulging what's left of the desire body. We have to cast aside those kinds of lower material thoughts which incline us towards a spiritual materialism or a material spirituality. So he is now an intelligent cooperator with the building forces of the planet, so his relationship to the Deva kingdom is very strong, and also of the solar system. You know, from the sixth initiation on, and upon his chosen ray, he will carry out his creative intentions. Note the persistent use of the word creative, which is allied to the third ray, which rules the particular initiation under discussion. So sometimes, you know, it seems that he's discussing just the sixth initiation. Sometimes it seems like he's discussing the last three or the last four, and we have to decide which is which. There's going to be, whatever is found at the sixth initiation, there's going to be an intensification at the succeeding initiations. If he understands, because he's entered as a monad, something of the planetary purpose at the sixth initiation, he understands even more at the eighth. If he's resurrected, maybe to sit at the right hand of God, maybe on the logoic plane, God being Sanat Kumar or the planetary logos, then a much greater resurrection off the cosmic physical plane occurs at the ninth. You know, so as he said, the seeds of what occurs in these very high initiations is already found in our much earlier, hidden in our much earlier initiations. Well, I suppose we could speculate for a long time about these matters, and some of the speculations will obviously be erroneous and certainly incomplete, but we get an idea of the tremendous vista that is opening up before the advancing initiate, who now, as a monad, is ready to work his way towards sacred training planets and towards constellations, which the cosmic astral plane will relate him to, and towards different cosmic planes, and eventually to the Pleiades, which are the hub of the turning wheel of the local one about whom naught may be said, in which we are participating. And if nothing else, if we're exhilarated, uplifted, inspired, energized to go forward and to help others go forward, then this kind of abstruse material will have played its proper part. So this is the end, right, the end of a Raise and Initiation Webinar Commentary number 101, and we're on page 729. And where did we begin? I'm always forgetting that. Was it 727? Yeah, 727. And almost an hour's program. So, and how much can we really study these things? Well, let's just study them for our inspiration. And, you know, breathing in the high energy of the greater gods and beginning of rays. Beginning of Raise Initiation Webinar Commentary number 102. And on to the seventh initiation, which, you know, is relevant to us at the time because the Christ, the great Lord, is with the Buddha taking that initiation. So even one of our earth humanity is now so far advanced that that initiation can be taken, though it lies thousands of years ahead of most of us. Okay. Many blessings, love and many blessings. We'll see you before long, and going on with the seventh initiation.